Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This organic movement that has cropped up all over the country.
This is healthy.
They are touching a nerve.
God bless them for their spontaneity. It's, you know, it's an independent people coming.
What we're seeing on the streets of New York is an expression of democracy.
We understand their frustration.
That it's about freedom of speech, the right to assemble.
We applaud their activism.
And the message of the protesters is a message for establishment every place.
I think it expresses the frustrations that the American people feel.
This is freedom. This is America. This is something we ought to celebrate.
And the protesters are giving voice to a more broad-based frustration.
It's young, it's spontaneous, it's focused, and it's going to be effective.
Russia had only 30 czars. Obama has 45. Welcome to the Savage Nation. We are watching the first phase of the street action of the Communist Party USA under the guise of Occupy Wall Street, Red October, October 1917, Red October, October 2011 in the USA of America, organized by Obama. No doubt the mastermind of this is his advisor and longtime street radical from Chicago. As you well know, I talked about this yesterday. Here we have a revolution occurring in America under the guise of occupying Wall Street, when in fact it's to cover up the crimes and misdemeanors of Obama and Holder, not to mention the fact that the greatest scandal in history is going on under your nose. How did another failing California solar company that was buffeted by short sellers, and how did it receive $1.2 billion in a federal loan guarantee? How did it receive it? Who was behind it? Another $1.2 billion to a solar company called SunPower. Astounding. Who was behind it? George Miller, Democrat, California, one of the most vile left-wing vermin in the history of the California Congress, was rooting for this $1.2 million in solar loans. But it gets worse. Who was the lobbyist for George Miller? None other than his lobbyist son, George Miller IV. Now, the fact of the matter is, George Miller has been one of the most vocal anti-American congressmen in all the years I've been on radio. You name the leftist cause, he's the biggest mouth on the block. And now you wake up and find out it was all about money, wasn't it? When the hell are you people going to wake up to the fact that the louder they scream about human rights, the louder they scream about homophobia, the louder they scream about clean energy, the bigger the crook, in my estimation. But you don't want to know about SunPower. You don't want to know about Nancy Pelosi's kin getting a $735 million loan. All you want to do is talk about the rich. Then how is it that Obama takes the money from the rich? How can this man go to their houses and raise money from brokers one day and then laud the vermin in the gutters who are going to sit outside their houses the next and get away with it? There's one simple answer: Andrea Mitchell and the others with dirty laundry in the media. People whose skirts are so dirty, there's no martinizing in the world that can clean Andrea Mitchell's skirts. And so, therefore, as I say to you, when you have dirty skirts like Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC, acting as a mouthpiece and a shill for the dirty Obama administration, when you have lifetime radical communists known as czars in the White House, remember, Russia had only 30 czars, Obama had 45. This is according to a new report that came out today, who studied, of course, in great detail, was the watchdog group Judicial Watch. The Russian title Tsar or Caesar was first used, as you know, in the 16th century. to describe the emperors of Russia. Right through the communist revolution of 1917, Russia had only 30 czars. But the most corrupt president in American history, President Obama, has 45, according to Judicial Watch. One after the other, these czars are unconfirmed by the Senate. They're unaccountable to Congress. And you want to know why the country is bankrupt? You want to know why Obama and Axelrod unleashed the mobs to cover up the Solyndra scandal, the LightSquared scandal, the gun running to Mexico scandal, the $735 million to Pelosi's kin, and now the $1.2 billion to Rep. George Miller's friends? You want to know why it's all happening? Because the terrorists, who are calling themselves liberals, are unleashing the mobs on the American people. That's why. Now, for years I've told you the Democrat Party had become the Socialist Party USA. Told you that. And I told you the Republican Party had become the equivalent of I don't know how to put it, let's say a left-wing Democrat Party of 30 years ago. John F. Kennedy, for example, today, if John F. Kennedy were alive and running for office, John F. Kennedy would be considered a radical right-winger to the right of, you name the conservative, Herman Cain, great guy. He's a liberal compared to a John F. Kennedy. And so the Democrat Party has long left its roots as a party of the working class. It became instead a party of the oligarchs, a party of the unions, and a party of the grifters and the others who have sacked the treasury. And so today I can prove it. Once again, the Democrat Congressional Campaign Committee is asking supporters to sign a petition in support of the vermin called Occupy Wall Street movement. This is coming from the Democrat Congressional Campaign Committee itself. And the fact of the matter is that these Wall Street protests are nothing but a cover-up for the most corrupt administration in American history. If you want to comment upon these protesters, if you want to comment upon George Miller in California steering $1.2 billion in a federal loan guarantee on the last day that it was permitted to do so, just last week or so, to another company, another failed solar company, if you want to look into this in great detail, if you want to look into the entire pack of Democrats and how they have been feasting on so-called green energy contracts, you can do so. Of course, tonight is a debate. And the Republicans, of course, are committing Harry Caray right in front of our eyes once again. It's astounding to me that they would permit themselves to be eaten alive by the vermin in the media like this. If I were running for office, I would boycott any debate until, one, it was actually the same year as the election. Two, until an unbiased moderator could be found to run the debate. And the first debate question that would be asked would be about, what would you do to stop the hordes of illegal aliens from Mexico coming over the border? What would you do to save America from the hordes of illegal aliens in our schools? What would you do to stop the hordes of illegal aliens pouring over the border from Mexico? How would you stop it? That's the only valid question to ask, but they're not asking it because the Republicans, as you well know, are shooting themselves in the foot once again, because I do not believe they want to win. I do believe sincerely that they want to lose the election in order to have four more years to blame the Democrats. That's personally what I think is going to happen. I do hope, of course, that Cain continues to thrive. And so I believe I was the first in the media to, let us say, get from him the fact that he actually had a degree in mathematics, violating the stereotype of the black man, which, of course, the Democrats want to propose, which is why failed degenerates like Harry Belafonte call him a bad man. Harry Belafonte, one of the most idiotic people in the history of the movies, had the nerve to call Herman Cain a bad apple. And Herman Cain fired back and said, I left the Democrat plantation a long time ago. Good for you, Herman Cain. But the fact of the matter is, Harry Belafonte is an uneducated dolt. Day-o, sang himself into a bunch of money, but he thinks that makes him intelligent. Herman Cain is the real McCoy. Herman Cain has a real degree in mathematics. Herman Cain has a master's degree. None of the plantation occupants can match Herman Cain. None of the idiots that they put at Harvard because of a certain desire to fill quotas can match Herman Cain in his intelligence, which is why they're threatened by him, why they hate him, and why, frankly, he should go all the way to the top. So tonight you're going to find out that Romney's health care law was a blueprint for Obamacare, as I've been telling you. In fact, I wrote about it in Trickle Up Poverty. It's nothing new to me. I knew it. What would you like to talk about on the Savage Nation? The street vermin, we can talk about it. New York, WOR, Chris, you're the first up. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind? Chris, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. I'm so happy to have someone like you out there to be driving this whole point home. I can't believe where I'm living in New York, okay? These people, they don't even know what they're down there for, number one, okay? And the growing numbers of people come down there, they have no independent thought whatsoever, okay? Maybe they should try to go out and get a job, okay? And stop trying to stop people from trying to make a living and go and do the right thing. I mean, I see people coming off the train, okay? And they're down there, and you try to, and you speak to them, and it does my head in. You try to speak and have a normal conversation with them, and there's no getting through to them.
No, because these are hardcore communists. They've been trained at ruckus camps ever since they've been drugged up as babies to do this. They're not there to reason with you. They are street radicals. These are the street vermin that brought Hitler to power. Let me reiterate what was going on in Germany in the 1920s. It was street communists like these rats who went in the streets, disrupted German society, attacked the police, caused a ruckus, and caused a Nazi party to originate, caused the Nazi party to create the brown shirts, which fought with them in the streets, which is exactly what the communists want. This is a disaster for America. And the faster the police crack down on these dirty vermin in the streets and arrest them, the less chance there will be of a Nazi party arising in the United States of America. I'll be right back.
Condoleezza Rice, we got Colin Powell. I know they're heroes for some people, but for a lot of us, they're not. And Herman Cain is just the latest incarnation of what is totally false to the needs of our community and the needs of our nation. I think he's a bad apple, and people should look at his whole card. He's not what he says he is.
Live 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch.
So you have a moron who made one hit record back in the 1950s, Harry Belafonte, who has been running on fumes ever since. And now he's a political pundit listened to by the other street vermin who don't know what they're talking about. Believe me, Herman Cain is a giant, and that man is a snail. Now, did Herman Cain answer him? I think he did. Do we have that tape? Let's play Herman Cain answering the minstrel. Let's hear it. Oh, we don't have the Herman Cain. Okay, well, he called him. He said he left the Democrat plantation a long time ago. Texas, George, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. The Wall Street individuals do have a justified reason for being there.
Well, that's a complete statement if you're a fool. Now, what else do you have to say?
Okay. Fractional reserve system for the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve Central Bank will ingest $10 into the economy and $10 into the banking system, and they will be able to...
I know you're reading one of the Ron Paul mailings, but you should have absorbed it before you called this national radio show. So tell us in plain English what you're trying to say.
Got $10 worth of stuff...
I said, put away the script that Ron Paul's minions sent you, and tell us exactly what you're trying to accomplish. What is it you'd like to see done?
Economic system, that's just plain bias.
What do you mean by a reasonable economic system? You mean where an idiot like you would become the CEO, an idiot like you who can't do anything right now because you're incapable and you don't have the education? So now you think you could be a CEO in another system? I mean, who's telling you could be a CEO? You can't even manage a lemonade stand.
You're out of your mind.
You're an idiot. Yeah, I'm the idiot who wrote best-selling books. What have you done with your life, jerk? Get back in your car. I suggest you dial 911 before you turn that key on, sir. I don't think you're capable of even starting your car right now.
I told you in the first place.
Do you have the owner's manual to your Toyota, which can tell you how to shut it off in an emergency?
It's using somebody else's.
Do you know how to shut your Toyota off when you're under such stress? Because I fear the other drivers on the road.
Yell as much as anybody.
I'm sorry. What is it that you do for a living that makes you an expert?
I do research for a living.
You do what kind of research?
Who cares?
Wait a minute. You're trying to present yourself as an expert. Now shut your mouth, dummy. You're trying to present yourself as an expert on the Federal Reserve. What is it that you research?
Who cares?
Well, I care. I'd like to know who I'm talking to. Are you in a mental hospital, a prison? Where are you? What, are you filling sodas at McDonald's? Are you wearing a funny hat with your name Stan on it? Who are you?
Look.
All right, that's enough for that. I've had my fun. I'm showing you, this is who's behind the vermin in the streets. This is how the communists and the Nazis, by the way, got a mass movement going. It's from idiots like Stan who think that if there's a revolution, they're going to wind up on top. What they don't understand is that they're losers now, and no matter who takes over, they're still going to be losers on the bottom. At the end of the day, Stan is still a Stan. He's still going to wear a hat that says Stan. He's still going to wear a funny hat that says Stan. No amount of a change of an economic system is going to take the Stans of the world and have them become CEOs. They don't have the brains. They don't have the guts. They don't have the ability to invest. So therefore, they're being promised a bill of goods that's false again. I've made my point. You try to be intelligent. You try to represent the bigger picture. You try to explain that this is the communist revolution all over again. You try to say that this is obfuscation by Obama. He's unleashing these mobs of the unwashed morons, the children in schools who are studying basically nothing, right? And he's trying to cover up the solar loans, the gun running to Mexico, the $735 million that was given to Pelosi's kin last week, the light squared scandal that threatens to bring down our airplanes and disarm our ships. This is all deflection and obfuscation being orchestrated by the White House. And this idiot fell for it because he reads the Ron Paul babble. And he thinks he's intelligent. He starts talking about the Federal Reserve. The next thing we'll hear is the word. Here's the key words for the crazed nuts. Federal Reserve, Bilderberg. These are all code words for Jew, incidentally. They can't say Jew anymore because it would show them to be the Nazis they are. So they say Federal Reserve, they say bank, and then they say Bilderberg. And you're supposed to now put the words together and come up with Jew. Don't you understand what this is? This is an attack on Jews at the end of the day. This is what it is. This is the American left attacking Jews. It's Bilderberg. It's Federal Reserve. Next, you're going to hear it's the Jewish bankers. But they can't say Jewish anymore, so they just say banker. Unfortunately for them, most of the bankers' houses that they went outside of today are not Jewish. I think that, so far as I know, Rupert Murdoch, although he's in the media and he's a titan in the media, I don't know why they protested him. They could have protested Ted Turner. Ask yourself why they protested Murdoch. He's not a banker. Why they pick on him? Don't you see the bigger picture? It is not about the banks.
Savage.
As far as Harry Belafonte's comment, look, I left the Democrat plantation a long time ago. And all that they try to do when someone like me, and I'm not the only black person out there that shares these conservative views, the only tactic that they have to try and intimidate me and shut me up is to call me names and this sort of thing. It just simply won't work.
Yeah. She's a day-o.
So who would you choose, Harry Belafonte or Herman Cain, who has a degree in mathematics, a master's degree, ran several corporations, etc.? Who is the better man? Do I have to ask you the question? That we're even giving the old singer any credence at all is only because of the sad state of the media to begin with. You understand that? So if you want to talk about the street rats in New York, and who's behind it, if you want to talk about who really should be protested, whose houses crowds should be outside of, whose houses should they be picketing? If you're fed up with the bailouts, if you're fed up with TARP, if you're fed up with the stimulus money, if you're fed up with the Solyndra loan, if you're fed up with the latest $1.2 billion that was given out last week by George Miller to his cronies here in California, ask yourself why they're protesting only conservatives and only banks. Don't you understand that this is deflection and obfuscation coming from Obama himself? WOR New York Rich, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Occupy Wall Street is people who are sick to death of footing the bill and bailing out failed banks who have made bad investments.
All right, so let's say they fail. They're sick and tired of that. Then why are they not picketing Geithner's house in Long Island, on Queens, since he's the one who did it?
Well, that may be next. That may be next.
They're picketing bankers. Why don't they picket Timothy Geithner's house?
Well, this is stage one.
He's the Treasury Secretary.
Okay, so
why don't they go back to old Hank Paulson, who orchestrated a lot of this? He's hiding up there in Michigan, I heard. In fact, why don't they picket Pelosi's house if they're fed up with the under the table kind of deals, huh? How come they don't picket Schumer's house, who's in bed with Wall Street? Why don't they picket the White House itself, which is behind all of the bailouts? So in other words, yeah, you could have outrage about the bailouts, but what are you attacking the wrong targets for?
The point of the matter is people are sick and tired of footing the bill.
But you didn't hear what I said. Why are you going to the wrong houses?
It doesn't matter. This is the way they're talking.
What do you mean it doesn't matter? What do you want to be, effective, or you want to be seen as morons?
So what's going on?
No answer again. Slow on the uptake. Again, it's a missing link. A missing link in the brain, a missing enzyme, or drugs. I don't understand it. You say something to them as clear as a bell, and it's like a pause. It's like on slow motion. Then you get an answer. I don't know whether they're reading from a script or there's an enzymatic deficiency. I don't quite understand this. Sacramento, Steve, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, great to talk to you. I was up in Sonoma County today. I'm a book distributor for the Bay Area to a major retailer, and I was shocked to see the rate of sale at that retailer up in Sonoma County. It's the highest I'd seen anywhere, and next to Marin, that's the most liberal bastion in the country.
Wait, I don't understand. You're a book distributor. You mean you buy books from distributors? You distribute? What do you do?
We supply Walmart stores their book departments, and I'm a district manager.
Oh, so you're saying abuse of power selling like crazy in Sonoma County?
Like hotcakes. I was shocked to see it. I saw all those books on the shelf. I said, is this a district?
But how could that be? How could it be that I, Michael Savage, the knuckle-dragging right-winger, writes the best book about the Bay Area since Jack London, and it's not covered by one local newspaper, yet the book's selling somehow? How is that possible?
Unbelievable. And the newspaper up there is called the Press Democrat, of all things.
Oh, sure, yeah. The Drug Democrat.
But I was
So you mean, but you distribute only to Walmart?
Yes, that's our only customer.
That's amazing. Well, I know that B&N is selling it out, Walmart, Target selling it like crazy. So I'm going to send you a free copy of Abuse of Power. Incidentally, folks, I have a question for you. Since I've told you that Hollywood, two of the biggest producers in Hollywood have turned the book down for fear that it would offend Muslims. Now, what's strange about that is that if you actually read Abuse of Power, there are Muslim terrorists in it because there are Muslim terrorists in the world. In fact, all you've got to do is look at Jimmy Carter's Egypt and see Muslims are burning down churches and killing Christians. But you don't have to know that. You don't want to know that because it would make you think about Jimmy Carter, Brzezinski, and Obama in another way. But there are Muslim terrorists in the world, so the hand of Allah in my novel are Muslims. But there are two Muslims in the book, two characters who are actually Muslims who oppose the terrorists. One is Sarah Gadon, who has a big role in my book. She's a hero right through the book. And then there's a cell phone salesman in London who discusses Islam with Jack. And then, although they disagree about certain things, they're on the same exact side with regard to their opposition to Muslim terrorism. So there are two positive Muslim characters in Abuse of Power, but I wouldn't want to bother liberals with the truth because their minds are already made up, not only about myself, but about virtually everything else. Let me ask you this. How do you fear Hollywood would try to change Abuse of Power to make it into a movie more acceptable for the distributors of movies and audiences in America? Would they make the Muslim terrorists into white supremacist militia members? Would they turn Jack's poodle, Eddie, into a lab rat because there would be a protest from PETA if a poodle was actually used in the movie, while there'd be a lower likelihood if they used a lab rat that Jack would have a rat as a pet rather than a poodle to make Jack look evil? What do you think that they would do to the book to destroy it if it became a movie? It's an interesting question. It really is an interesting question, to be honest with you. I can't imagine what the idiots would do to the movie. It's terrible. I don't even think I want to sell it to them. I'm thinking of producing it myself, to be frank with you. I'm getting so pissed off at Hollywood. There are 700 independent theaters in America that if I produce this movie myself, I mean, I don't want to get distracted into movies right now. There are so many talented independent actors, directors, writers, etc. You can really bypass the whole studio system. And then there's 700 independent theaters where I could distribute the movie. I don't really need them. I don't need the studio system, and I don't really need the theaters, because basically they're censors. They want to censor movies, and which is why you get the dreck that you get in the theaters today. Basically, they homogenize anything that's good and turn it into dreck. Last week on TV, I saw an amazing movie. I forget the name of it. It was an Israeli movie, and I heard it was remade recently. The Bargain or The Debt. And one of the finest productions I've ever seen. I stumbled on it, and it was about an old Mossad agent in her 60s, going back to her early days 30 years ago, when she and her cohorts capture a Nazi murderer in one South American country, and they hold him captive. He escapes. And then it's 35, 40 years later, and she's sent on a mission to kill him again in an old age home in Germany. In the Ukraine. It's astounding. And I watched this movie. I said, look at the quality of the acting. Look at the quality of the writing. Look at the quality of the directing. I said, we have to have equally talented actors, directors, writers in America who are locked out of the American film market because they're too good. And they won't play ball with the vermin who run Hollywood. So I said, I'm sure I could put together a team like that. Well, anyway, that's a separate story. I heard that a new version of The Debt is coming out, or it's already been made with Helen Mirren. I hope they haven't butchered it to feature her or something else altogether. Anyway, let's get back to the big story here, 1-800-449-8255, which is the vermin in the streets of America. I only wish it snowed early. If only we could end the October Revolution early, maybe we could have a freak snowstorm. They can go home to mommy and complain that they have the sniffles. Pittsburgh, PA, Jim, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, good to talk to you. Yeah, I believe that I haven't seen very many Hollywood movies where the protagonist is Jewish. It seems like you kind of make a lot of references to that in your book. They'd probably change that right off the get-go. That'd go off.
No, the protagonist, Jack, is Christian, but his mother was Jewish. 498255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Houston, Texas. Some call it Houston, but it's Houston. It's still called Houston, even though in New York they call it Houston Street. That's because New Yorkers can't pronounce anything. It's Houston Street. Imagine if you're in New York and you want a corned beef sandwich, and you go and you ask a cab driver, can you take me to Houston Street? He wouldn't know what you're talking about. It's actually Houston Street. Houston Street. Don, you're on the Savage Nation.
Well, it's a pleasure talking to you. It's funny you mentioned Houston Street because I went to NYU, and I used to hang out on Houston Street, but now I live in Houston, Texas, 25 years later. So anyway, in your book, Trickle Down Poverty, weren't you saying that a lot of these investment banks were guilty and the hedge
yes.
funders were guilty? So what I'm
saying— Hold on, slow down. Don't make such a broad-scale indictment. Certain hedge funds, not all hedge funds— do the same thing. Not all hedge funds invested against the housing bubble, housing market, and not all hedge funds skewed the market by shorting the mortgage market. You got to understand that I was targeting them.
Okay. So, and I agree with 99% of what you say because you're not like Rush Limbaugh. But what you just said kind of surprised me. That's why I called him. You said, and I'm not one of them. I'm not marching on the streets. But you said, well, they're targeting the wrong people. Well, look at Lloyd Blankfein, the chairman of Goldman Sachs. He's as guilty as sin. And if they march in front of—
Well, hold on. What is Lloyd Blankfein guilty of?
Goldman Sachs, Michael, was one of the largest packagers of this garbage, these credit default swaps, and then they bet against it. I mean, if you I'm sure—
I hear you. I'm not in favor of it. If he is guilty of that, then perhaps he should be picketed. But why not picket Geithner? Why not picket Paulson? Why not picket Obama? The man is still giving out stimulus funds and insider loans. I mean, let's not look backwards. Let's look at what Obama's doing today.
I agree with you, but that could be stage two. But in other words, the bankers, in other words, there's two sides to the equation.
What about Schumer, who says he's in favor of the protesters when his biggest donation base is Wall Street itself? How does he get away with that?
Michael, I'm no Democrat. Please don't misunderstand me, okay? I'm no Democrat. I mean, I think they're trying to co-opt this movement. They're just as guilty as the other side.
All right, now you hit the nail on the head. Co-opt the movement, and you know that Pelosi is behind it because she's as guilty as sin, and she's trying to cover up what she's been doing. You know that.
Michael, I agree with you. The Democrats are just as corrupt as the Republicans, okay? I mean, what I'm trying to say is, though, some of these big guys like Fold at Lehman Brothers, who you rightly criticize, the other day. I loved your commentary on Dick Bolt. You said that that movie, I forgot the name of the movie that they made recently, conveniently left out his golden parachute of $400 million.
Yes. That was a great movie. Yes. But they left out a number of conveniences. Yes.
Right. So what I'm trying to say is, you of all radio commentators are a very honest man, and I respect you very much. And all I'm saying is, you know, some of these people are hippies, but some of them have a good point. And you know, the French Revolution started like this. I don't know if they're sharpening the guillotines, but, you know.
So remember I said yesterday, once the guillotines started rolling, cutting off the heads of the rich and the aristocrats, and once all the aristocrats had their heads cut off, they didn't stop the guillotines. Soon they were cutting each other's heads off. Once you start a revolution, it's almost impossible to stop it, which is exactly the point I'm trying to make. The people behind this revolution called Occupy Wall Street are hardcore 1960s former members of the SDS. They were involved in the Days of Rage. What they really want to do is kill the rich. They don't want any equity in this country. You've got to look at Ayers, Bernadine Dorn, Mark Rudd, the Weather Underground. You got to look at these people and got to understand what they want to do is destroy the United States of America itself. That's what you've got to understand, Don.
Well, I'm not for that. Obviously, I'm not. Okay.
But most of us are not schooled in who these people are. You're not schooled in the fact that these Marxists want total revolution. You're not schooled in the fact that the Occupied Wall Street movement wants nothing less than the collapse of the American government and economy. You're not schooled in the knowledge that it's them behind the college kids who are in soft subjects where they fundamentally can be out of school for 30 days. It wouldn't matter. So I appreciate your commentary and listening to me that carefully. I know that people do listen to me to catch me either making a mistake or to learn from me. I understand the responsibility is awesome. And Don, even though you went to NYU, I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power. Daylight come and me wanna go home. I'll be right back.
Day. He's a day.
You'll notice the big lie coming out of Pelosi and Wasserman Schultz, calling it a spontaneous movement or an organic movement, and it's about the young who are frustrated. Nothing could be farther from the truth. In my estimation, this has been carefully orchestrated for several months now, just as the Arab protests were carefully orchestrated at least a year in advance by members of the Obama administration, incidentally. These protests have been on the drawing board for a very long time. This has Axelrod's fingerprints all over it. This is a community organizer behind it all. This is how they work. It's to distract, deflect, take away people's attention from Holder, guns to Mexico, take away the attention from Obama and the money to his cronies in the solar industry, and take away all of these realities of the most corrupt administration in American history and throw it onto the backs of Wall Street, which is very interesting because Wall Street, in fact, put Obama in office, which is utterly amazing to me, how they get away with this. Utterly, incredibly amazing, incidentally. 1-800-449-8255. In Sacramento, we've had protests, I hear, as well. Let's go up there to Jason. Jason, what did you see out there?
Hey, Michael, I'm actually calling you from Newport Beach. I was in New York a few weeks ago, and I had to wade through these protesters while I was at the New York Stock Exchange, and they are exactly what you say they are, malcontents, unhappy with the world. There's nothing more to say about them.
Yeah, think about it. Where do they have the time to lay in the gutter for day on end? Where do they get the time to do this? How could they have a career? They have nothing. They're trust fund brats. These are mainly hardcore activists who are being paid by the SEIU or the other local unions to lay in the gutter. These are also students in soft subjects where there's no ramification for missing a year of classes, let alone 4 years, because they learn nothing anyway, except how to put a condom on a cucumber and sleep with their roommate. I mean, they learn nothing in college except how to be activists. Then they come out and they go to work as a barrister, which they last at for 2 days, because they go home crying because they can't make a macchiato, cappuccino, whatever, and they get upset if someone asks them for three coffees at once. So, of course, they're in the gutter. These idiots think that they'll be the CEO of Starbucks if only there was a communist revolution.
Well, one thought I kept thinking as well is I wonder what Mayor Daley of Chicago would have done. I mean, for all of the faults that he had, imagine if – can you imagine a mayor like him letting this go on and on and on?
That's no, but it was different times. It was a different time, and there was more tolerance amongst the American people for disrupting these kinds of activities, because these activities are disrupting the lives of ordinary working Americans, cab drivers. How about pregnant women in ambulances – who were unable to get over the Brooklyn Bridge last week or 2 weeks ago? How come none of the vermin in the media reported about the people who died in ambulances because of these rats? How come you didn't read any of that?
Well, that would make too much sense. I mean, we'd see...
That's right. How about the cab drivers who are immigrants from Bangladesh who have worked all their lives for the medallion and are trying to pay off the medallion, who couldn't make money that day? And a day, 1 day's loss of income for a cab driver can be catastrophic in their overall income for the month. And yet these rats from NYU are laying in the gutter, tell everybody that they're for the working poor. They're not for the working poor. They are minions of the most powerful, corrupt class that has ever existed in America, in my analysis. This is, of course, one man's opinion. I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power, in either case. That's all. Because I know many people love this book. It's selling out across the country. Believe it or not, it is. So, and by the way, we have to remind you that the Holder story should not be overlooked. Here you have Eric Holder, Attorney General, up to his neck in Fast and Furious, Gun Running to Mexico. And the day he is called to testify, he releases a story about the arrest of Iranian agents who wanted to kill the Saudi ambassador, when in fact Obama had been briefed on this in June. You talk about a well-oiled propaganda machine. These are some of the most intelligent and corrupt people in the history of this country, which is how they got there and how they're getting away with it.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This organic movement that has cropped up all over the country.
This is healthy.
They are touching a nerve.
God bless them for their spontaneity. It's, you know, it's an independent people coming.
What we're seeing on the streets of New York is an expression of democracy.
We understand their frustration.
That it's about freedom of speech, the right to assemble.
We applaud their activism.
The message of the protesters is a message for establishment.
She's the establishment. How could you buy this? How could they act like they're part of the protesters? Well, you get the picture, don't you? You've got the most powerful, corrupt administration in American history, forcing these poor marijuana-induced children who were raised probably on psychoactive pharmaceuticals such as Ritalin, Prozac, and they sent them to colleges where they learned nothing except how to cause ruckus and disrupt workers from their daily job. Then they put these poor idiot children in the streets, mixing in union organizers with them to give it a flavor of ethnicity. But it's 90% lily white. It's mainly lily white hippies who have nothing to do with their lives, who are terrified that when they come out with their useless high-priced education, there'll be nothing waiting for them because they're frankly, they're fit for nothing. They have no skills. They've not majored in anything worth anything, or they wouldn't be in the gutter. I mean, think about it. If they were majoring in chemical engineering, do you think they'd have time to lay in a dirty sleeping bag in a park in New York and eat leftover food? Do you think that? Or let's say they were pre-med somewhere and they had to take real examinations in anatomy and physiology, neuroanatomy, neurophysiology, fetal anatomy, and they had to actually study these things. You think they'd be laying in a filthy sleeping bag smoking marijuana in the park? It's crazy to even believe for a minute that they know what they're doing. So they're being used by the Obama administration in order to deflect the crimes and misdemeanors of this administration, in my estimation. And now they say they're going to pick at the rich. And they're going to pick at the bankers because they bailed out banks. Or they, I don't know who they're picketing. But why don't they pick at Geithner's house, since Timothy Geithner is the Treasury Secretary? And he's orchestrated an awful lot, $1 trillion worth of money to cronies who have donated to Obama and Democrats. Why don't they pick it? The White House itself, since Obama just pushed another $1.2 billion in solar loans that will no doubt go up in smoke. Why don't they pick at Schumer's house, since Bigfoot gets an awful lot of contributions from Wall Street? How foolish can you be to believe any of this? The fact of the matter is, while Russia had only 30 czars, in its entire history, and Obama has 45 to date, we also must understand why they're able to get away with it for the first time in American history. Remember, if this were a Republican administration, let's start from the top. Let's assume it was a white male Republican in the White House, and loans had been given to oil companies, for example, to drill. And then the oil company went bankrupt and $500 million went missing. And then while the FBI is investigating that oil company, the white male president authorizes another $1.2 billion in loans to a white male through a white male congressman named George Miller in California to his cronies. Tell me there wouldn't be riots in the street and the media wouldn't be literally electrified with this story. Now, the reason they're not electrified is because people with dirty skirts like Andrea Mitchell, who was married, after all, to the head of who? I mean, do you have any idea who these people are? Do you have any idea, these girls with dirty skirts in the media, who they were married to, in this case of Andrea Mitchell? Perhaps the most disfigured human being to ever have occupied the media. She was married to the man who ran the Federal Reserve Bank, Alan Greenspan. You talk about hand in glove. You talk about one hand giving out the money and the other hand covering it up with a breezy little show on MSNBC. And ask yourself why they're not picketing Jeffrey Immelt's condominium in Manhattan or co-op. Why are they not outside the General Electric building, who made $5.1 billion last year in U.S. income and paid zero in income taxes? Ask yourself why, and the answer is simple. Because Axelrod told him not to go there, since they're all working together. How stupid can the American people be to pay any attention to the marijuana-induced lunatics in the gutters? So if you want to talk about any of this, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Now, this doesn't mean I don't believe there shouldn't be protests. There should be. But the protests, as you well know, are being used to cover up the crimes and misdemeanors of the Obama administration. You want to have protests, talk about the Solyndra loan. Talk about the Light Squared scandal, which has been swept off the page. Talk about the money of $1.2 billion in new funding that was given to George Miller's district here in Northern California. How come you're not talking about that? How about talking about the women who were about to give birth who couldn't get to the hospital because of the vermin in the gutters when they were blocking the Brooklyn Bridge last week? How about the cab drivers who can't make a living for the day? How about the waiters who are trying to get to work? How about the ordinary people of New York, Chicago, wherever else these vermin are, who are being blocked from their livelihood, their income? They're not representing you. They're not representing the working people. As a matter of fact, it's the opposite of that. What they're doing is covering up Obama's crimes and misdemeanors in plain English. Now, you talk about hypocrisy, and I can't let this go because it's right up my alley. It's a food-related subject. And as you know, I'm a food-obsessed individual. I don't know, maybe it's genetic, maybe it's a familial thing, maybe it's a personal thing. But when I read that Michelle Obama, who lectures everyone about eating, broccoli and fresh vegetables, She goes on to a cooking show, and the woman who runs the cooking show says this. She said, Michelle ate more than any other guest they've ever had on the show. Michelle kept eating even during commercials, Dean said. And she taught Michelle Obama how to fry shrimp during a TV segment in September. This is the woman who tells you to eat, you should eat carrots while she eats fried food. And then she said, the first lady has a good idea to get Americans gardening. But in fact, she herself loves fried foods. And she says, you know what their favorite foods are, meaning the president and his wife? It's hot wings. You know, those kinds of foods that are not necessarily top of the list healthy foods. So Michelle's no different than the rest of us, she said. We love those kinds of foods. We just know that we can't eat them every day. So in other words, it's not do as I do, it's do as I say for Michelle Obama. And what trip is she going to go on next? It's unbelievable to me, again, if she were a first lady, Republican woman, from a Midwestern background, not of African-American descent, would she be able to get away with this kind of hypocrisy? You know and I know she wouldn't. And it's because the media is owned by the Obama administration. It's one and the same, the government media complex. Now, I understand that I have no power, no influence whatsoever. I realize I'm just a fly on the wall of the American media landscape and that nobody listens to me. I mean, allegedly, this is the third most powerful radio show in America. Allegedly, it has 8 to 10 million listeners. Now, it's astonishing that I've written one best-selling book after another. Trickle Up Poverty was on the New York Times for a number of weeks. And now here I am, this nun man. I'm a nun person in the new Soviet America, which is how it works in the Soviet Soviet Union, which is that if you don't comply with the vermin left-wing rats who run the country and the media, suddenly you no longer exist. Look what they're doing to Herman Cain. Herman Cain is actually such a proud, wonderful example of a human being of any race, but especially so of the African-American, for the African-American people. He rose from a family where his mom was a maid and his father was a chauffeur, I think, and a janitor. And look what he made of himself. Do you have any idea what that does to a man like Al Sharpton, a man who's made his living by threatening people and faking his degrees, a man like Jesse Jackson who's shaken down companies his whole life and never produced anything that anybody ever needed, never ran a company? Do you have any idea why they hate Herman Cain, why they're trying to disgrace him? For the same reason that they hate me, because I rose from nothing to become what I am today with one best-selling book after another and a very prominent voice in the conservative media, frankly. If you want to call it conservative, I don't even like the word. In fact, when you say conservative, I get a little uneasy because many conservatives are doctrinaire Republicans, and they make me very uncomfortable in that they represent special interests that I don't particularly feel very, very good about. I'm basically an independent. I have been from the beginning. I'm a registered independent, always have been, as opposed to the Johnny-come-lately. So I'm going to go off the plantation for a moment of the conversation for one moment. Last night, after the show, I was invited aboard a Navy ship because it was the end of Fleet Week here in San Francisco. And as a proud member of the U.S. Navy League, which is a civilian support group for the U.S. Navy, I secured two invitations to the Bonhomme Richard, which is almost a 1,000-foot assault landing craft. It's an amazing ship. I've been on it before. And what I like about it is seeing the dignity of the naval officers on the ship. I like seeing the positive energy of all of the testosterone. And I look at the ship and I say, how the heck do they make this thing run? How do they still have boys in America who can shoot a machine gun, drive a Humvee, drive a ship, fire a rocket? How do they still make boys like this? I know they don't make them in San Francisco. I know that they can't be found anywhere in Pelosi's district because of her values. I know they can't be found in George Miller's district because of his corrupt values, in my estimation. I know that they're not found, by and large, in Schumer's backyard in Sheepshead Bay. They can't make boys like this anymore. Instead, they produce potheads who go to film school at NYU and then can't even make a commercial. But nevertheless, I go on the ship last night. I'm having a nice time. The food is, you know, Navy food, not great. Truthfully, I was going to go to Chinese food after I learned in the pay. I mean, I'm not into frozen. So, I had a couple of beers. Their beer selection was very good. I met a guy on the ship who actually survived the sinking of the USS Pennsylvania at Pearl Harbor. The guy has to be 90. Spry as a spring lamb. I posed a picture with him. I said, you survived the sinking of the Pennsylvania? He says, yes, I did. He said, I was wearing a full football uniform that day on the ship as it was going down. I said, a football uniform? He said, yes, we were going to play football with an opposing ship on the deck of the ship, and I was in a uniform. I said, how'd you swear? Anyway, that was one story. There are a couple of stories about, you know, war heroes that I met. As I am leaving the Bonhomme Richard, a guy came up to me. I'm not going to describe him at all for fear of what will happen to him in the Navy. And he said, Dr. Savage, I must speak with you. And he told me what's going on in the ships. He told me that there are gangs that roam the decks of the ships at night, the equivalent of the Crips and the Bloods, on the dark decks where people are afraid to even walk on the decks of the ships, where they have divided themselves up into gangs on U.S. naval ships. He told me about the number of young women, if you want to call them that, who are coming into the Navy to get pregnant strictly for the benefits, and they get some of the most golden rewards for getting knocked up in the Navy, and then they file charges against the men in order to disrupt the Navy. This is all a product of the so-called feminist revolution in America. And then he told me what the radical feminist women are doing to the Navy from the top to the bottom, how they're actually firing men. And then he ended by this, and I'm not going to tell you who he said, who did it. He said somebody knows very well, with 25 years of distinguished service in the U.S. Navy, was reading one of my books, and the book was open on a table when a radical feminist, you know, one of those bowling pin women with very short hair and very mean faces, came into his office and saw my book and had him fired from the Navy just for reading my book. I said, that can't be possible. He said, it happened. I said, but that's something that would have happened in the ex-Soviet Union. He said, it's happening to the U.S. Navy under Mullen. Now, I have told you that Mullen is the most dangerous Joint Chiefs of Staff head we've ever had. He has a very fine voice, and he looks really like the role. But if you check it out, he's another empty suit appointed by Obama. And that's why the Navy can't fire a shot today. I'll be right back.
Do you view this as a patriotic march?
I don't think we know what we're doing enough for it to be technically patriotic.
No?
I mean, come on.
Turn it off. Okay. Bad radio. So there in Chicago, a news person asks the protester if she views it as a patriotic protest. And she's banging a drum, and the idiot girl says she doesn't think they know what they're doing it enough. They don't even know what they're doing it for. She said, we're just crazy liberals, and that's what we're doing it for. Reporter asks what the American flag represents in 2011, and listen to what this idiot says in clip 10.
What do you think the American flag represents in 2011?
So she says the American flag represents nastiness and killing people. This is a useful idiot. This is exactly what Lenin dreamed of. We now have in America millions of these useful idiots. They think that they're Obama supporters when he started a war in Libya, continued a war and escalated it beyond belief in Afghanistan. They don't say one word about it. And so here we have the socialist workers of America mixed in with them. Listen to clip 13 now. Listen to this.
Go ahead, sir. Socialistworker.org,
yes.
Then you support socialism versus capitalism?
Depends on how you define socialism. Socialism means a democratic...
All right, you see, here we have another, imbecile, useful imbecile, I would call him, because there's an imbecile, there used to be a scale of stupidity when I was a kid, more on imbecile idiot. I guess they eliminated that because they had to hire people for the media. So you couldn't say more on imbecile and idiot on the lowest scale of human intelligence, because then you'd be defining MSNBC. I mean, which one is a moron, which is an imbecile, and which is an idiot? You can take your choice. But when I went to school, Lenin said that they're useful idiots, maybe he understood there had to be at least the highest scale of mental defectives in order to be able to work for the Communist Party USA and not even know it. You know what I'm saying? But you could call them useful morons or useful imbeciles, depending upon which city you're in.
Savage.
And don't forget Eric Holder. Congressional investigators are going to subpoena Eric Holder in the Fast and Furious probe. This is perhaps the most serious scandal to have hit a presidency since Watergate. And they're seeking communications from about a dozen top Justice Department officials, including Eric Holder, his chief of staff, Gary Grindler, and the head of the department's criminal division, Larry Breuer, Fox News has learned. Remember Larry Breuer. Remember that name carefully. The subpoena could be issued any day now, and it's going to try to find out what he knew and when he knew it. They want to know, the investigation wants to know about the death of U.S. Border Patrol agent Brian Terry with the guns that were sent to Mexico by the U.S. government. The fact of the matter is somebody in the U.S. government approved this. There's no question about it. Two guns found at Brian Terry's crime scene were linked to the failed operation that allowed more than 2,000 weapons to go into Mexico. This is a huge story, and it's interesting to me that the day Eric Holder finally comes out from hiding and gives a press conference, the well-oiled media complex, government media complex, suddenly releases a story that the Justice Department foiled a plot by Iranian agents to kill a Saudi ambassador. It's amazing to me how well-oiled the government is. I mean, you got to give them credit for that. This is the most well-oiled government media complex in my lifetime, much more well-oiled than it's ever been. I've never seen anything like it. Whether or not anything will come of this is another story. My feeling is that if you have a guy like a Holder who granted amnesty, or let us say let the Puerto Rican terrorists off, gave a walk to Mark Rich, the scandal of the Mark Rich scandal, and then was still appointed as Attorney General because of the weakness of the Republicans, I suspect that they're going to let him have a walk as well. Again, they're intimidated by many factors coming out of this administration. The Republicans are once again committing suicide politically in every other way. It's very bad for America for them to do so. For example, here they are agreeing to yet another debate. Virtually every week, the Libs set up another debate where they chop each other to pieces. And Obama, who is the most scandal-ridden president in history, doesn't have one question thrown at him in such a debate. Why? Because the Democrats are much smarter than the Republicans as to how to hold their party together and how to hold on to their power. They recognize that debates are not good in the communist society that they are living in. Debates are only good in a democratic society where the truth comes out through a series of reasons and didactic arguments. This is how you arrive at the truth. When has Obama been subjected to a debate? Why are there no Democrats running against him in the primary who might ask him about Solargate, Light Squared, gun running, the $735 million to Pelosi's kin, the $1.2 billion that just went to George Miller's friends out here in California? Why don't the Democrats have a candidate to debate with Obama? Because they're too smart. And unfortunately, I'm sorry to say, the imbecilic Republican National Committee is destroying one candidate after another. I mean, just witness the Lilliputians like Wolf Blitzer, the man who was a disgrace to himself, to his family name, to the Jewish people, to the Israeli people, a man who was made a mockery of everything that was good about all of those things I just mentioned, a man who would have possibly been I don't want to embroider any more about him. I detest the man. I think he's one of the most dangerous type of individuals because he looks so benign. Whenever you see a sheep like that, you know there's a wolf underneath it. So nevertheless, the wolf in Blitzer clothing is a moderator for Republicans, and these schmucks let this jerk moderate and ask them thrown questions? No, I wouldn't do it. I would refuse. Moreover, I would say we're going to pick our own moderator, our own time, our own place, and we're going to limit the number of debates. Instead, they're committing suicide. They're cutting each other to ribbons. And little men like him, the Lilliputians, are loving it. Because why? Because his boss, Barack Hussein Obama, gets to pat him on the back and say, good boy, Wolfie, way to go, you live another day. You pushed a few more into the ovens, and you get to live one more day, Wolfie. You're a good boy. 1-800-449-8255. When I say pushed into ovens, I'm talking about a Herman Cain and the pizzas. You know what I'm saying? You got to understand what I mean by that. I mean, Herman Cain was in the Godfather pizza business, so he pushed pizzas into the ovens. And that's what I'm making that reference to with regard to Wolf Blitzer. Don't take it to mean anything else. Don't show any historic context in pushing people into ovens. Because I was talking about pushing into ovens. I was talking about pushing pizza pies into ovens. Victorville, California, wherever that is. Steve, welcome to the Savage Nation from Victorville. I know where it is. I'm just joking.
Not too many people do. I just had a comment on those dirtbags that are down there on Occupy Wall Street. You know, we work 4 to 5 jobs in our household to make our payment every month. And to sit down there and think that we owe them a dang dime is just beyond me.
So you have to ask yourself, who is in the gutter? Who are in the gutters of America amongst these so-called spontaneous young people? The unions, college students, the hardcore homeless, the hardcore will never work because they're unemployed, because they're unemployable. That's who's in the gutter. These are not working people. Working people are either working or looking for a job. They're not in the gutter screaming. And then ask yourself why they're outside Murdoch's house screaming at him when he had nothing to do with the banks. Why were they not sent to Jeffrey Immelt's mansion or co-op in Manhattan when Jeffrey Immelt owns NBC and MSNBC and is the chairman of General Electric, which paid no income tax last year? So if you see that they're not really going after the real hard targets of corruption and greed, they're only going after targets that are convenient for the Democrats, you understand that they are an arm of the Democrat Party, and this is all about reelecting Obama is what it's about.
I think that they're going after middle America that's out there working their butts off every day and wanting us to pay their ticket. And
that's of course true, because Obama has always targeted the middle class. He has targeted the bourgeoisie, is who you're talking about, because that is the lifeblood of the Communist Party USA, is to shrink the middle class. He's achieved an awful lot. Obama's on the road to achieving the two-class society that his boss has told him about in college. I'm sending you a copy of Trickle Up Poverty, and the next caller will get a free copy of Abuse of Power. But he should get Trickle Up Poverty. I think I still have him in the, 1-800-449-8255. So I told you the ship, the Navy ship, the Navy League. Beautiful night. I told you yesterday, I'm going to tell it to you again, to show you what's happening as a result of illegal immigrants working in restaurants in America. If you patient for it, you're mistaken. Your health laws are collapsing in America, because what they're doing, in essence, is they're turning America into the country they came from. Instead of them coming up to the standards of America, they're pulling America down to the hellhole of the third world that they left behind, not only socially, but on every other level. Eating there once in a while, I was starving, needed a quick shrimp burrito, whatever they make. And I gave the woman a buck tip. I know you don't do it because you're liberals. They don't tip anybody. I always tip fast food workers because I was poor. And she said, thank you. Nice middle-aged and maybe 40-year-old El Salvadoran. And I say, blah, 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 I'm waiting for it. And I see the guy start to make my grabbing the food from the back with his hands. No gloves on. No plastic gloves. He's grabbing the shrimp by hand and the lettuce. I said, hey, wait a minute. I said to the lady, I'm not eating that. He's handling my food with his hands. I'm not eating it. I said, he's got to put gloves on. She says, no, he doesn't. I said, are you crazy? You're living here in America. You have a law, health law. She says, no law told us we can make it with our hands. Arrogant, hostile. You don't tell me about these immigrants. I know what they're going to do if you're willing to right now. As I said that to her, here in San Francisco, looked at me like I was the bad guy. I was the wrong guy for telling her that they were poisoning people with their dirty, filthy hands. I don't care what the race is. You don't touch food with hands. That's a law, isn't it? Is there someone listening to this and tell them what went on and tell them that they must use gloves, or I'll bring the health department of the county and of the state down upon and close them down for selling fresh? Because I will never go in there again. Never. And then these immigrants won't even have a job because they're acting so fresh to everybody who comes in there. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Not only are illegal immigrants destroying the society at large, wrecking our hospitals, bringing in diseases, which I've warned you about in Immigrants and Epidemics. I'm going to give you an example. Here's a headline. Parasite infection hits U.S. infants hard. Infants born in North America are more likely to suffer the severe effects of the parasitic infection toxoplasmosis than infants in Europe, a new study says. In the study, 84% of U.S. infants had the most severe symptoms of toxoplasmosis, including eye disease, calcium deposits in the brain, and hydrocephalus, a condition where the fluid builds in the brain, possibly causing brain damage, at a higher rate than that in Europe. Can you believe it? So why is it that infants and babies in the U.S. Are suffering inordinately from this parasitic infection? Where do you think it's coming from? Well, it's coming from immigrants and their epidemics. It's a disease caused by the parasite Toxoplasmosis gondii, which is usually contracted by eating raw or undercooked meat, or by coming in contact with the feces of an infected cat. Okay? Well, how does that have to do with immigrants, you have to ask yourself? Because if a mother is infected early on in her pregnancy, the risk of her child getting this disease is relatively low. But this risk rises to 80% in later stages of pregnancy. And the fact of the matter is, many immigrants are eating food that is not prepared properly. They're eating meats in particular that are not properly cooked, because in their home country, this is how they were used to eating the meat. I realize you don't want to hear any of this, and you don't want to face the realities of illness. But here we have now another clear example of immigrants and epidemics. And this study was, they won't say that, by the way, in the study. You have to read between the lines, as I always do, to get the truth, because we're living in the Soviet America, where the truth is rarely published, even in science. For example, I have a friend who's a physicist, PhD physicist. He went to a conference last week in Florida that was run by the U.S. Department of Defense, and it was about physics. But there was another division of the convention that was run by the old hippies from San Francisco from the 60s, these unwashed, like Wall Street types, the Woodstock hippies. They had a conference talking about what should be done in the future in space and how nobody should be able to take over any aspect of space. Nobody in America should own anything in space. It should all be communally owned in space, the same way the Wall Street protesters are calling for universal health care and the lack of private property, meaning no private property. You don't understand that you're living through Red October 2011. You don't understand that it's the left wing being run by the Marxist in chief. You don't understand that these mobs were unleashed not only to bring about worldwide socialism, but to cover up the Solyndra scandal, Light Squared scandal, gun running, the millions, the hundreds of millions to Pelosi's kin. This is all deflection and obfuscation. The fact of the matter is, as I told you yesterday, and I will tell you every day, as so long as these Woodstock Wall Street terror groups occupy any park in America, so long as these Woodstock Wall Street terror groups are permitted to hang out in the streets another day, I'll tell you again that we're witnessing the beginning of the second Bolshevik Revolution in the United States of America, which is being egged on by our first communist president. And never forget who was behind our president. David Axelrod has been a lifetime street agitator. He is behind this. Rahm Emanuel, a lifetime socialist. He is behind this. Everyone who is behind this is either a lifetime criminal in one way or another, or a lifetime communist. What's interesting is many of them are super rich themselves. And the reason they're happy that the Woodstock Wall Street terror groups are attacking Rupert Murdoch and Lloyd Blankfein and some other bankers is because they're not attacking them. The fact of the matter is, there's a lot of problems in the banking system. There were a lot of scandals that went on, but why not pick at Paulson's house, the former Treasury Secretary? Why is he allowed to get away with it? He oversaw this. How about Timothy Geithner's house? I understand Timothy Geithner can't pay his own mortgage, which is why Obama made him Treasury Secretary, because that way the man will do whatever he's told. If you have a man who's so stupid that he can't pay his own mortgage, and yet you could send him around to tell the Europeans how to get their house in order and they boo him, what could be better? The man doesn't have any shame. He doesn't even understand how dumb he is. But they're not picketing Geithner's house. You understand that? Now, what does this have to do with the Woodstock Wall Street terror groups in the streets of America? The Woodstock Wall Street vermin in the streets don't even know what they're doing. They are useful morons, imbeciles, or idiots, depending upon which university they didn't go to. The fact of the matter is, though, that the leaders of these Woodstock idiots are not useful idiots. The entire left-wing cabal under Obama are very intelligent. They are some of the most intelligent, the most devious people the world has ever seen. And the reason they're stirring these people up is because these people who should rightly be attacking them are being used to attack the banks, so-called. But the protesters are too ignorant to understand this. They're merely, well, as I said before, the useful idiots. Now, are the conditions really ready for revolution? We talked about that yesterday on the Savage Nation. Unless you understand who Bill Ayers is, unless you understand that Obama has been and probably still is deeply connected to Bill Ayers, you can't understand any of this. According to Lucinda Franks and Thomas Powers, who wrote for UPI in 1970 when Bill Ayers attended a protest organization meeting in November 1969 in Washington, D.C., he was asked what the weatherman program was. Remember the weathermen, the weather underground? He said, kill all the rich people, Ayers answered. Break up their cars and apartments. But aren't your parents rich, he was asked. Yeah, Ayers said. Bring the revolution home. Kill your parents. That's where it's really at. Now, Bernadine Dorn, who is now Bill Ayers' wife, is quoted in the same article. I'm quoting now from Frank Mealy's great article, The Conditions Ready for Revolution, which I posted on michaelsavage.com. Bernadine Dorn, who's married to this communist, Bernadine Dorn, is quoted in the same article as exulting in the deaths of Sharon Tate and her Hollywood friends who were victims of the brutal Manson family murders of 1969. Dorn is quoted as telling 400 people who attended a gathering in Flint, Michigan in December 1969 for a, quote, war council. She said, dig it. First they killed those pigs. Then they ate dinner in the same room with them. Then they even shoved a fork into a victim's stomach. Wild. This is the rhetoric. This is the rhetoric. A gleeful account of symbolic cannibalism by the poor against the rich that makes you understand, finally, what is going on in the streets of America. And you have to understand that the Wall Street protest was lauded by Francis Fox Piven, who you never heard of. But Francis Fox Piven is the co-author of the 1960s strategy to destroy the federal government by bankrupting it through entitlement programs. I don't think you understand it. You know how many liberals I've met in my lifetime over the last 40 years who said, take the benefits, they're yours, you're entitled to them? To all of the filthy vermin in this country who have never worked a day in their life, they're entitled to your tax dollars? Well, one of the masterminds of this was Francis Fox Piven, who wrote a strategy in the 60s to destroy the federal government by bankrupting it through entitlement programs. And so, therefore, if you think that these Marxists who are behind the vermin in the street don't know what they're doing, you don't know how the danger you're in. It's if you don't see the attacks on capitalism as the latest phase of the same Marxist propaganda that created 70 years of slavery in Russia, that killed 60 million people in China, and turned North Korea into a basket case where millions starved to death, it means you are more gullible than your wife even believes you are. If you're lapping up this idiocy, it doesn't mean that you're gullible. It means that you're a fool. And as the writer said, but that doesn't mean the gullible amongst us won't be lapping up the rhetoric of the Woodstock Wall Street terror groups with the same intensity that a dog goes after its own vomit. The fact of the matter is the latest plan to occupy enemy territory started quietly on September 17th in New York City. And what were the props? An agitprop poster featuring a variation of the old Soviet hammer and sickle. And the red star of communism shouted, Wall Street belongs to us. Ladies and gentlemen, keep your eyes on Obama's friends, former members of the SDS, and Bill Ayers. Make no mistake about it. We are living in very dangerous times. Read Abuse of Power. You will see fiction that is more real than reality.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Questions for the Savage Nation today. How do you think Hollywood would try to change my novel Abuse of Power to make it more acceptable to liberals as a movie? I guess they would make the terrorists into white supremacists instead of radical Muslims. I guess Jack's poodle Eddie would be removed from the movie version so that those who would find dogs offensive won't be offended. Then they could sell a movie in the Middle East. They could make Jack into a pacifist who would engage in a dialogue with the terrorists instead of fighting with them. We've also asked you and asking you now, what is the most outrageous thing you've seen the street vermin do at the Occupy Wall Street protests? How do you feel about the street vermin bringing their children along to learn to be mini communists? What is the number one story you think the left is trying to cover up by focusing on these protests? Guns to Mexico by Eric Holder? Solo loans to Nancy Pelosi's kin? Solo loans from Obama to supporters? The Republicans are holding yet another debate tonight. Don't you think they're committing Harry Caray? Don't you think Republicans are damaging themselves by holding repeated debates while Obama gets a skate? Would you respect a candidate more if he publicly announced that he would not participate in any debates until, one, it was in the same year as the election, two, an unbiased moderator could be found to run the debate, and three, the first debate questions were about defending our borders and stopping Islamofascism? How would that work for you? At the same time, we're watching the communists in America with their Occupy Wall Street fake protests. And the reason they were unleashed by Obama, Holder, Axelrod, and others is to get everyone off the point that Holder is deeply embedded in the Fast and Furious gun scandal. Obama is deeply embedded with Energy Secretary Chu in giving hundreds of millions of dollars, in fact, billions of dollars, to contributors for fake solar companies. In fact, the Light Squared scandal threatens to bring down the navigation systems of our military, and the owner of Light Squared is a Democrat donor. It's unbelievable to me, and they're getting away with it because of MSNBC in particular. At the same time, how many years have I told you the Democrats are the socialists of today? I can prove it. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is asking supporters to sign a petition in support of the communist Occupy Wall Street movement. How do you like that? How much more do you need to know? Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199. AmericaIsRising.com. Berkeley's nuclear-free zone law has been questioned. In England, the land of the slaves and the home of the freak, children are now banned from blowing up balloons or blowing on party whistles because of new EU safety rules that have just entered into force. Jimmy Carter says that his life was shaped by peanuts. No more needs to be said. Russia had only 30 czars. Obama has 45. Another loan, $1.2 billion, another loan given on the last day that they could give it out just last week. SunPower, take a guess who was into the process. The left-wing loudmouth George R. Miller III, Democrat, California. And take a guess who his lobbyist was, his son George Miller IV. And that explains to you why the leftists are all evil and why the leftists are all dangerous. It has nothing to do with principle. It's all about power and money. Today on the Savage Nation, again, I'm talking about the Red October of October 1917 and the Red October of October 2011, and how the Red October is coming from the White House, who unleashed these Occupy Wall Street mobs to cover up the Solyndra scandal, Light Squared scandal, gun running to Mexico, and the $735 million to Pelosi's kin. deflection and obfuscation. Remember what it's all about. Don't be deceived. Don't be a fool. Understand what it's all about. Tonight we are told that Mr. Kane, my favorite, is going after Romney, as he should. U.S. bust two Iranians today over terror plot Obama was briefed about in June. Why do you think they did it today? Because Holder is on the firing line. And Holder ended a press conference after questions were raised on his fast and furious involvement. This man has to be subpoenaed. Subpoenas have been issued, or will be issued any moment. Ron Paul is asking who else is on Obama's secret kill list. Pelosi disclosure, belated in husband's land deal. Congressman, as I just told you, congressman from California, none other than the loudest of the loudest leftists, own son lobbied for a solar firm and then got a $1.2 billion federal loan. It's astounding. Christians are dying in Egypt. Churches are being burned. Michelle Obama likes fried food. On a cooking show, the owner of the cooking show said, she probably ate more than any guest I've ever had. She kept eating even during the commercials, including a 15-layer carrot cake. How do you like that? What else is on michaelsavage.com? Well, you'll have to go there to find out. I'll give you a hint. Communist vermin to attack homes of the rich. Journalism, terrorism, patriotism. Just how far up does the abuse of power reach? Read my novel, Abuse of Power. I believed in this novel so much that I wrote it. I guarantee it. Abuse of Power by Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, Greg in Chicago, you got my attention. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hey, Michael. You know, Obama learned his family, the federal family here in Chicago. Just in the past week here, we've had our tolls go up 87%. In the past couple of weeks, we got a guy getting a former chief of detectives in Chicago Police getting out. Chicago Police is $150 million short. They're like 2,000 officers short. The new public schools chief who came here from New York is now saying that Ernie Duncan, one of Daley Dunce's, you know, basically screwed up everything in underfunded schools, and they got money coming out their ears. It's like we got a dropout rate like it's going out of style around here. I mean,
well, but they could all go to work for Obama as refrigerator inspectors and come into everyone's house to see if you have an extra refrigerator in the garage. Okay. They can give them a green uniform and hire them. That's what Maxine Waters would want, you know, to deputize the Black Panthers. You know, I was watching a thing on mobsters last night on one of the channels, and it was about Al Capone. I think I saw it before in 09. I don't know if you ever saw it on one of the history channels. And I was amazed that when Capone was finally nailed on income tax evasion, he had tried to bribe the jurors and couldn't. Then he tried to have the judge killed, and they were interviewing the judge's son. We're talking 70 years later. The guy's an old man himself. He said, the judge of the trial, they try to kill him, Capone. Try to kill a judge. They'd have police around them all the time. So I said to myself, is Chicago still like this? Greg, is it still? It isn't that bad, is it?
Well, I mean, it may not be that bad out in the street, so to speak, but yeah, it is. I mean, we've got a bunch of guys here who, for instance, this guy Blagojevich, this guy Kelly, who had, you know, started up a roofing company.
Who's a goy? Who'd you say is a goy?
No, it's a Blagojevich, one of his guys.
Oh, the goy. Oh, a Blagojevich, I'm sorry.
And, you know, I mean, these guys, all of a sudden, all these guys who are about to get indicted or they got to, you know, go rant out somebody else to save their own skin, or they have the capability of doing so, you know, suddenly they're all committing suicide, you know. One guy gets...
They are? They're taking the gas?
So forth.
They're taking the gas at the last minute to avoid ratting out people because they know their families will go if they do, right?
Right. That and you know, you hear people talking...
Well, you got to hand it to the Chicago mob. I got to tell you, they're brilliant in terms of having cultivated Obama. They got the perfect poster boy to have engineered the White House takeover, didn't they? I mean, come on. This is like Arnold Rothstein fixed the World Series of 1919. This was amazing. I mean, they knew exactly who to pick and how. Because Obama's policies are no different than that of Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton. It's just that he has a different appeal. You know what I'm saying? But basically, he's the same person.
Yeah. People do not understand how politics in this city, it's door-to-door, it's knock on doors, it's take names, it's kick butt, it's all that stuff. And thuggery...
Well, in the 1920s, I understand they used to give out $5 bottle of, pints of cherry brandy to the poor in Chicago to have them to vote in the elections. And now they give them, I don't know what, food stamps?
Breakfast, what's lunch... That? You know, whatever it takes. You know, we had Joey the Clown Lombardo, who went to prison, is going to be there for the rest of his life, who said in his testimony at his trial that when it came to the city politics, all aldermen in this city run their ward like a fiefdom. And to get anything done, legal or illegal, you got to go to the alderman and you got to pay your price. And
that- how different is that than New York City or San Francisco, which is perhaps the most corrupt city in the United States of America? And one of the least known for corruption. San Francisco is as corrupt as they come, which is why it's liberal. I don't think people understand that corruption and liberalism go hand in hand, because a conservative generally cracks down on corruption, while a liberal deflects people with so-called crappy social issues that no one really cares about. And they make you think about the social issues while they're robbing the Treasury blind. It's an old game. It's like a combination. It's like Playboy. Playboy had a formula where they would show TNA, okay, and then in order to make you feel not guilty looking at the naked girls, they would run an interview with, like, a pseudo-intellectual who just wrote a book.
Hey, Michael, one quick thing. We got a guy, Daley, our former mayor, Rahm Emanuel, is going to pay off. Back when Daley, before he got elected mayor, was the state's attorney, and people were being on the south side, you know, guys.
This is too complicated for me. How's Rahm Emanuel doing as a mayor?
Well, I'd say good and bad. And the bad part about it is nothing's changed. The guy has changed. Some things have changed, but you know what?
Did he grow up in Chicago? Was he there as a young man?
Yeah, relatively speaking, yeah, because he worked with...
So he's more of a Chicagoan than Hillary Clinton was from Chappaquiddick.
Pardon me?
I mean, he was more from Chicago than Hillary Clinton was from New York State.
Way more.
She was a carpetbagger. She moved in and ran in the district simply to run, but she wasn't from New York.
No.
So let me read you a paragraph from Abuse of Power, page 267, without giving the plot away, okay? They took a gently winding road along the bay. Haddad is one of the villains. Haddad looked out at its clear blue waters, marveling at its beauty as he watched the distant sailboats bob along its surface. He had always loved this view, with the Cliff House restaurant, the Marin coastline beyond, and the tattered sea-swept ruins of the Sutro Baths on the shore below, which had once been the world's largest indoor swimming establishment until it burned down before Haddad was even born. And yet it was soon to be so different by his hand. There were times when he wished that he could simply go back to his college days, when life was less complicated, when he could hate without having to rein that in, so he could carefully engineer an expression of that loathing. And to be honest, though he had been here to learn and to study the ways of the infidels, there were times he envied them their blissful obliviousness to the world and its dangers. He wondered what life would be like without a larger goal than making money and raising infidel children. He wondered if in his lifetime he would ever know the peace and contentment of a Sharia world. They drove around a bend along Point Lobos Avenue until they came to a large car park on their left near the Sutro Baths. Tally pulled in and found a spot, then shut off the engine and turned to Haddad. "Okay," she said, "almost there. We're in a national park, so we have to be aware of other visitors and watchful eyes." "I'll trust you to guide me without incident," Haddad told her. She smiled again. "You are just so damn cute, you know that?" She parked and leaned over and kissed him, making it very clear that she enjoyed his company. He managed to keep from recoiling and actually returned her smile. "Shall we?" she said, as she popped open her door. Indeed. They found their way to Land's End Trail, which was far from rustic and perfectly maintained, surrounded by lush green foliage. They followed a winding path, feeling the wind in their faces, enjoying the quiet, which seemed so unusual considering that they were still in the city. As they passed the USS San Francisco Memorial, little more than a flagpole and plaque, surrounded by a few large gunmetal gray pieces of an old warship that to Haddad looked like giant dumpsters, Tally glanced about, then grabbed his arm and steered him toward the edge of the cliff. This way, she said. The cliff looked quite steep, but they were both wearing clothes for climbing, jeans, flannel shirts, rugged shoes, so Haddad followed her down through the rocks and trees until they were very close to the water. He could feel the ocean spray on his face as she led him around a small outcropping, then upward again until they found a secluded patch of land just below the cliffside, full of dirt and rock and grass and surrounded by thick green trees. Page 268, Abuse of Power. Two more paragraphs. Glancing around again for prying eyes, Tally moved up to a large grouping of stones gathered near the base of one of the trees. Taking hold of the largest stone, she said, "Help me with this." Haddad grabbed on, and they huffed and struggled a few moments until they rolled it aside to reveal a crevice just wide enough to squeeze through. The crevice was formed in a slab of cement rather than earth, and Haddad could see that it was an exposed portion of a larger structure that had somehow been dislodged, possibly in an earthquake. "This is it?" Haddad asked. "This is the entrance?" "Only the brave know for sure," she said, casting a look around to make sure that they had not been observed. "You want me to go first?" Not one to back down from a challenge, especially coming from a ridiculous female, Haddad waved her away, then studied the crevice, looking for the best way to proceed. Deciding to go feet first, he sat down and stuck his feet into the opening, then lay on his back and slowly wormed his way downward, shimmying into the hole. As his feet penetrated the darkness, he felt the ground suddenly give way beneath them, nothing but open air below. Catching hold of the edge of the slab, he said, "How far is the drop?" "Not far," she told him. "Just let yourself go and be mindful how you land." He landed hard, but on his feet, the sound of the impact echoing against cement walls. Pulling a small flashlight out of his shirt pocket, he flicked it on and found himself inside a narrow concrete shaft. To his left was another shaft with a built-in rusted rebar ladder that led deeper into the earth. "Watch out," Tally said. "Here I come." And I guess I can't tell you any more because it's a big, big part of the plot. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Christians are dying in Egypt, not by spontaneous combustion. They're being murdered by Muslims. And the question is, what is the future for Egypt now that Jimmy Carter and Obama have unleashed the Muslim hordes on the Christians? Joining us right now to discuss this is the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, and the founder and president of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, David Rubin. David Rubin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, thank you. Good to be with you, Michael.
First, could you remind my audience on the Savage Nation who the Coptic Christians are and what has happened to them since the overthrow of Mubarak by Jimmy Carter, Brzezinski, Barack Obama, and Soros?
Well, one thing that much of the world doesn't seem to be getting is the Arab Spring is nothing but that. Nothing of that kind. The Arab Spring is actually an Islamic winter. The Arab Spring that everyone was praising in the streets of Cairo, Egypt, just some months ago, and in Libya, is actually what I call it. It's actually the title of my book, the Islamic tsunami. Okay, we are talking about a situation in which the Islamic Sharia law is taking over in the Middle East. It's taking over country after country. And the main power brokers in the Middle East now are the Muslim Brotherhood and the Ayatollahs of Iran. And they're in competition. Those two players are the two major power brokers in the Middle East. And that's a very dangerous situation.
Well, doesn't what's happening right now in Egypt prove that the Middle East faces a dire threat of the radical extremism of the Muslim Brotherhood?
There's no question about the radical extremism is coming from the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood itself is the organization that formed the Hamas terrorist organization. The Muslim Brotherhood is an organization that, despite the fact that they masquerade as a political party in Egypt right now, they call for a globalist jihadist process to destroy and eliminate the Western civilization from within. This isn't David Rubin talking who's saying these things. This comes from the founding documents of the Muslim Brotherhood. It comes from the Quran. This is the core of Islam, I'm sorry to say. Now, a lot of people tell me, well, surely you're speaking about radical Islam, the radical elements in Islam. Well, no, I'm talking about the core of Islam that calls for jihad, that calls for holy war against the non-believers, meaning all non-Muslims, meaning Christians, meaning Jews. And we see the manifestation of that in Egypt today, where it is where the rumor of some Christians building a church is enough to start a mass riot that kills 24 Christians and wounds 200.
Well, what does this mean for the future relationship between Egypt and Israel?
Unfortunately, the situation is not stable in Egypt. For many years, there was a peace treaty with Egypt. It was a cold peace, yes, but it was a peace treaty nonetheless with the leader of Egypt, Hosni Mubarak. He was thrown out with the help of the Obama administration. And unfortunately, the situation right now is very, very unstable. We've had the gas line between Egypt and Israel has been blown up three times already in the Sinai Desert, which borders Israel. There are threats all the time against Israel. The Israeli embassy was attacked by massive riots that were encouraged by the main ruling powers in Egypt. We are in a very dangerous situation.
Well, does the Muslim Brotherhood want a war with Israel?
Well, I don't think it's in their interest right now for them to instigate a war. They want to gain power in Egypt. They want to win free elections that are soon going to be in Egypt, most likely in the coming months. So they want to come to power. They and all their Islamic allies want to come to power. They want to impose Sharia law on Egypt, which I should add most Egyptians believe in and most Egyptians want to have that oppressive Sharia law in Egypt. And the situation is such that right now there is virtually no question that that's what's going to happen. There was a poll taken just some months ago in Egypt in which they found that 84% of Egyptians believe that a Muslim who changes his religion should be executed, and in most cases publicly, in the public square. This is what Egyptians believe. This is what Egyptians want. And it looks like this is the direction that it's going in. The Muslim Brotherhood, when the time is right, will be there with the other Arab nations, with the other Islamic nations that surround Israel, ready to attack. There's no question about it.
Doesn't this violence prove that Anderson Cooper and the other other idiots in the media supporting the so-called Arab Spring were not only wrong but complicit in the killing of Christians?
There's no question that they're wrong. I said it from the start when they were talking about the pro-democracy movement. They were talking about the Arab Spring. Those are loaded terms, if I've ever heard any. And in my book, The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama, I explained all of this. I predicted all of this, that the different Islamic organizations, that the Arab Muslim countries are all going to be there against Israel, are all going to be shouting death to America, death to the great Satan, death to the little Satan. And this is what we see happening, even in Libya, where the American government, unfortunately and mistakenly, poured billions of dollars into NATO's war against Gaddafi. Well, Gaddafi is no friend of Israel and no friend of America, but the people who are going to be replacing him are also no friends of America and no friends of Israel. They're already calling for a draft constitution that has Sharia law as the basis, that has that oppressive Islamic law as the basis for the new Libya. So we see it happening all across the Middle East.
Can anything be done to bring an end to the violence in Egypt and across the Middle East?
The only way that you stop violence coming from a violent culture is to show that you can fight fire with fire. You do not defeat terrorism. You do not defeat Islamic extremism by reaching out your hand in peace and saying, let's negotiate. You don't negotiate with terrorists. You smash them to smithereens. And that's how you fight terrorism. You cannot fight terrorism by telling the terrorists that you want to have peace and we want to negotiate and we're sorry for what we've done. Being an apologist does not stop terrorism and does not stop the terrorists from continuing their war against the United States and Israel.
Well, David Rubin, thank you for joining us today on The Savage Nation. It's a very sad time indeed.
You're welcome, Michael. It was good to be with you.
This is The Savage Nation.
Savage.
This organic movement that has cropped up all over the country, that has Occupy Wall Street and has become Occupy Boston and Occupy Miami and all over the country, is really symbolic of the frustration that middle-class folks and working people feel, that that the wealthy seem to always have the wind at their backs, and at the end of the day, that they need to make sure that our economic policy is reflective of helping the middle class get ahead. We understand their frustration. We applaud their activism, and hopefully they're going to help get the Republicans in Washington's attention so that we shift the Republicans' focus from just Barack Obama's job to everyone's job.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now.
Eddie, my love, I love you so. How I want it.
It is the Savage Nation. And did you ever think you'd live through another year of Obama? But look, I don't want to do politics right now. Weekend. They don't really care about the debate and next Tuesday and the NFL and the Obama blinked or the Republicans blinked. I can't even follow it personally, nor do I care. It's just too far ahead for me to care about it. I've got a big announcement to make, though, I'll tell you that. Do you know who is going to precede me on WOR in New York starting next week? Former Governor Patterson from New York is going to precede me on WOR, which is very interesting. And he's actually going to join me tomorrow on these airwaves to talk about his new show. Now you say, well, wait a minute, Savage, come on now. Wasn't he a Democrat? Yeah, but did you ever hear me bash Patterson? Almost never. Why? He was actually more, let us say, centrist than Bloomberg is in New York. So, I mean, the Patterson family goes way back in New York. Basil Patterson, I remember an awful lot of the family history in New York, so it'll be fun to have him on the show tomorrow. You know what I want to do today? I'm going to read you something. I'm going to read you some titles, and I want you to answer the question. Would you rather I talk about the Keystone pipeline that runs from Canada to Mexico, or Obama, or the electric blue saddle-stitched pants, the fly in the tuna, Symphony Sid story, tough high school geometry teacher with two fingers on his right hand, happy and sad cufflinks, Woodchuck Bill, Fat Pat and Tippy the dog, Tippy dies and is thrown into a garbage truck, Dead Man's Pants, Sam the Butcher, Nutty Friend Who Had a Crazy Mother, Coney Island Wax Figures, Half Man, Half Woman in Long Beach, The Chestnut Man, One Arm Frank, Louie and His Crazed Monkey, The Nympho in Alley Pond Park, Love by the Sewer Plant, Fat Al's Tuna, My Silent Brother, My First Autopsy, My First Dead Body, My First Mortgage, Killing Mice in a Laboratory. Which would you rather I do? Would you rather I read or actually tell you some of these childhood stories, including new ones, that actually some of them came, a new one came to me in the middle of the night last night on the Savage Mind. The Savage Receiver Mind was on at 3 in the morning. You know what came to my mind? I was telling you a story yesterday on this show. Remember I said my friend's father was the toughest guy in the crowd, and boys tend to gravitate towards the toughest man in the circle because the tough men are usually the tribal leaders, which is always true. It's always been true, always will be true. Now, tough can mean tough of mind, tough of body. This guy was tough of body and tough of mind, so he led the boys, and I told you that. He was an Upper East Side bar owner when the other guys were petty merchants or had small menial jobs. You know, we were all immigrant families. Somehow he worked his way into opening a slick bar on the Upper East Side, and he was he wore suits. The other guys wore overalls or blue shirts. He wore a white shirt. But nevertheless, they were all in the same social milieu. He never put his nose up in the air. So I was thinking about him last night as I went to sleep, and you know what came to my mind was this. I remember once my friend's mom, who was married to this tough guy, took us to his bar. I don't know where she took us, the Ringling Brothers or whatever. And then in the middle of a sunny day, we went into this dark wood panel bar in the Upper East Side, and nobody was in there. It was almost like out of a Godfather scene, except the owner, who was this guy, and the bartender, who looked remarkably like the bartender who chokes Fat Clement, not Fat, the other one, to death in the Garden. It was like a... And we ate dinner in the place. And I'll never forget, as long as I live, it was remembrances of steaks past. When I ate that steak in that bar that he made for me and the other kid, his son, I finally ate steak. I had no idea that the steak I'd been eating in my house, it was like eating a catcher's mitt. I thought steak was supposed to be something you struggled with. I thought steak was something you had to attack like with a saw. This is not an aspersion upon my family, but I mean, we didn't have a lot of money, so I guess we got a cheaper cut of meat, or these guys knew how to tenderize it. But I remember cutting into that steak as long as I live and how tasty and soft it was. I said, I didn't even know this was what steak was supposed to taste like. So it reminded me of the old Buddy Hackett joke, another one, long dead. Who remembers him, right? You remember Buddy Hackett, old Catskill Mountains comedian, but one of the best. He got up once in front of an audience and he said, I never forget when I went to the Army to Fort Dix. He said, all my life, he said, I suffered from indigestion from my mother's food. He said, I ate the Army food and I didn't have indigestion. He said, I went to the doctor. I said, doctor, something's wrong with me. He said, why? He says, I have no gas, no indigestion. I don't feel like puking. What's wrong with me? In other words, he had never eaten a meal before that didn't get him sick. I thought it was funny, but it related to that in a sense of the steak. So, okay, you have the choice. It's your show on the Savage Nation. You want me to do the Keystone Pipeline? You want me to speculate on whether Hillary Clinton will run in the primaries against Obama? You want me to talk about Muslims and the headscarves at the Rye Playland? You want me to talk about Maxine Waters? I don't want to talk about it. I'll take your calls instead on the Savage Nation. Let's start with Arizona, Brent. Brent, thanks for calling me. What city are you in Arizona, Brent?
I'm in a little bit south of Tucson in the town of Green Valley.
Is there a town called Threeson, or is they're not numbered down there?
There's a Three Points.
You see? So what'd you call about, Brent?
The electric saddle stitch pants from your book.
Did you ever hear this story? I mean, did I ever...
Years ago when the book first came out, and I fell over laughing hearing it.
Okay, it's a true story, and I'm actually going to read the electric blue saddle stitched pants. In the seventh grade, my mother bought me the most beautiful, incredible pants. We didn't have a lot of money, but she knew I wanted these pants really bad. It was the Elvis era, right? Mama Savage saved, and she bought me a pair of electric blue saddle stitched pants. Well, I wore them to school. I thought I was Elvis himself. Well, on the very first day, a bigger, older kid just happened to be wearing the same exact pants, and naturally we got into a scuffle. He pushed me down, and my gorgeous Elvis pants were ripped in the knee. I thought it was the end of the world because these were the most expensive, beautiful pants I had ever had in my life. So the rest of the day, I couldn't sit through the classes. Whatever the teacher said, my mind was somewhere else. My heart was pounding. How am I going to tell my mother? How am I going to tell my father? How am I going to tell my mother? So I come home with the pants, hiding the rip under my coat. I said, Ma, I ripped my pants. But she didn't get mad. She said, let me see them. Don't worry about it. I said, you're not going to tell Dad, are you? She said, no, 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 don't worry about it. So all night long, I couldn't sleep. The next day, the women were talking it over, sitting around the little table in that little house in Queens, and they were moving the crumbs around with their bread knives and talking. They decided what to do. They took the pants to a certain tailor, and the word came back. Don't worry, Michael, the pants can be weaved. Now, I didn't know what the pants can be weaved meant. I don't think they do that anymore because clothing has become something different than it was then. We throw everything away. But I knew from that moment on that everything would be good, and it was. The pants were weaved. That's what a mother's for, I guess, to fix everything but a broken heart. And that's from an earlier book of mine, Psychological Nudity. David in New Hampshire, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. My girlfriend has twin three-year-old girls, and their birthday is actually today. We're going to be celebrating on Saturday, and I got them a couple of things related to elephants because they happen to take a real liking to them, and we're going to be taking them down to Boston to the zoo.
Hmm.
Them. And I just wanted to ask you what made you become interested in them and just expand on a little bit for me.
It's an interesting question. Why do I have a soft spot for elephants and gorillas is the question. I have supported the Gorilla Fund, the Elephant Fund, Elephants have always struck me as friendly giants. They're vegetarian, number one. That's first of all. They always, there's a certain look in their eye that is that has always somehow reached out to me. I don't know how to explain it. It's an emotional thing. Somehow the bigger the animal, the more vulnerable they seem to me, and the more care they actually need, the more sensitive they actually are. And I have a soft spot for large, gentle giants. I mean, that's to start with. They're not a vicious animal. Let me put it to you that way. There are vicious animals on Earth, like pit bulls, for example. Piranha fish, okay? I don't support the piranha fish fund. I don't support the pit bull rescue fund, if you know what I'm saying. You ever look at mountain gorillas, how they hide and want to be left alone? They want humans to leave them alone. How human they look as they sit with their female and their offspring trying to survive in the canopies of the rainforests in Africa, as they're hunted down for their claws by vermin lower than animals. I mean, ever since I've been a kid, I see these lumbering, gigantic animals, the elephants. I don't like seeing them in captivity. There's something grotesque about putting chains around their feet and making them perform like stooges. I mean, I don't go for that part of it. So if we can stop the poachers by funding the armies that kill the poachers, I'm all for that. You know, there are armies in Africa that go out hunting the poachers. You know that.
No, I didn't. But
oh, yes. They're armed with automatic weapons, and they have to hunt down poachers who are killing elephants simply for the ivory, because the ivory trade is very big in China, as you well know. The esteemed advanced culture of China still thinks that ivory is something to hunt. They're so advanced, you know. As you well know, anybody is better than an American to the liberal. They think that everybody in China is superior to every American. Anyway, thanks for the question, David. Free copy of Abuse of Power goes out to you.
Savage.